Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. It's 5 o'clock. Want to thank everybody for sticking around. I know it's the second to the last day and everybody's kind of dragging and whatnot, but thanks for coming to the session today. And my goal is to give you something that you can actually take away and use in your own environments and things like that, kind of give you some new ideas. My name is Mike Terrell. I'm the practice lead at 1E, which means I'm a consultant. And so this is going to be spun from a consultant's viewpoint. So we tend to travel around a lot, and we don't always have a lab available to us, especially when you're on the airplane or something like that. So there's many ways to set up a lab, but this is just to kind of show you what you can do today with this kind of technology. I've been deploying Windows since NT days, also specializing in SMS and Config Manager that long as well, so it all kind of fits together. So like I said, there's several ways you can go about doing a lab, and this is kind of a modular approach that you can take and mix it with a physical lab or completely virtual. It's solely up to you. We're going to kind of start off a little bit slow and ramp up because I imagine there's a lot of different levels of people, and I've got three main technologies that we're going to talk about. So we'll give a brief introduction to those just in case you haven't heard of them or seen them or used them much in your line of IT work. We'll be able to quickly create a lab, and then the goal is to be able to reuse it and build upon it. Also, make you guys the heroes in terms of you can give this to your coworkers or keep it a secret if you really want to, and then give it to your coworkers and really impress them, that kind of thing. So lastly is whenever I attend these sessions, I always get a bunch of new ideas. It may be directly related to or indirectly related to what the topic is, but hopefully this will give you guys some ideas to take back and use in your own company. So just to cover off a couple types of labs, there's shared labs, which you might use with your coworkers or teams that you do things in. Sometimes those can get kind of muddy in terms of somebody running something, doesn't get cleaned up, things don't run properly, unless you got a good change type control. Personal, which is just you, so you know it's always going to be in whatever state you left it in, and that's pretty much what we're going to cover off today. However, you can take a personal lab and move it to a shared lab. So once we get things set up the way we want to, we can port that over to a shared type environment. There's also virtual labs, which is what we're going to do with today. You can mix them. They can be fully physical labs, which is what we had to do about 10 years ago before the virtualization technology really took off, and we didn't have the hardware to quite run it. So it was full lab build out. You had to order duplicate hardware of everything just so you could build a lab. And then mixed. So that's probably the ideal scenario, especially if you're doing a lot of OS deployments or software deployments, that kind of thing. It's always good to test those out on the physical machines that are used in your environment as well. Virtuals would get you a good part of the way, but you can run into idiosyncrasies on certain types of physical hardware or driver conflicts, that kind of thing. So you could essentially take this lab and have a good mixed type environment. Then we've got fully isolated labs. So today, this lab that we're going to build is running off of this laptop, so this is going to be a fully isolated lab. You might have network services in your lab, you might not, meaning you might have Active Directory, a domain controller, DNS, DHCP, that kind of thing. So I've preloaded a domain controller that I use just for those networking services in this lab. The scenario that we're going to cover today is just a single subnet, but we could easily expand this if you had to test across, say, multiple subnets. We could create virtual routers, And that's a little bit beyond what we'll be able to cover off in the next 70 minutes, so we won't get into that today, as well as internet access. You might need to get to the internet to do some testing that way, but in an isolated lab, you won't have that. So, lastly is, you know, it's always good to have these things isolated from your production network. How many people like to test things in their live production network? And we got one guy. I know there's several others in here, but just nobody brave enough to fess up. So it's always good to test and test as much as you can before you get to the production network, because you know that leads to long nights and long weekends if something goes really bad. You can cover a good majority of scenarios and kind of get a good idea of what's going to happen and flush out your plan to implement whatever you're implementing. But you can always run into bumps when you get into the production environment, because oftentimes, you know, even lab environments don't mimic the true production environment. So, but it's always good to do it in an isolated environment before the production environment. So this is from a consultant viewpoint, once again. These are just kind of my recommendations, and these are pretty standard. You can get these in laptops like that today. The main thing is RAM, obviously. If you're using a lot of virtual machines, they like RAM. It's good to put as much as you can get into there. We're going to be using Hyper-V, so it does require 64-bit, which most of the Intel processors come with today. So the last thing that's really key, though, is solid-state drives. So I was told probably about 3 or 4 years ago, once you make a switch to solid-state drives, you'll never go back. So I kind of held out because they were really expensive 3 or 4 years ago. And then one day took the plunge, and I haven't gone back. So, but the key is that not all solid-state drives are created equal. So you really want to pay close attention to the specs. So you might see a good deal on a cheap drive, but chances are it doesn't give good read-write speeds. So you want to make sure you've got a lot of IOPS as well, especially if you're loading lots of VMs. And then if you get into scenarios where you're actually testing server-based stuff, not just clients, but servers and clients, that's where it's going to really make a difference. So since I deal a lot with Config Manager, that puts quite a load, as well as SQL Server too. OS recommendations. People do run server OS on laptops and workstations. There's no need for it today unless you absolutely prefer it. With Windows 8 came client Hyper-V. Prior to that, there were other virtualization technologies that I used, but as soon as Windows 8 came out, took advantage of Hyper-V. Both of these flavors do have Hyper-V, and there are some changes between Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, which I'll get into in a little bit. So get with the latest and you'll get all the features that are currently available today. So the setup that I'm using here, actually, I wasn't sure I was going to get it in time for a tech ed. It came Friday at like 3:30, which is good because my other machine doesn't run Windows 8. Is a Dell Latitude E7440. So this is very lightweight, which is good for lugging it around on airplanes and stuff. it does have an i7 processor, 16 gigs of RAM. It comes with an mSATA drive, and you can actually get a 7mm SSD. So I like the Samsungs, the EVO line. They've got really good specs, and the prices have almost come down in half over the last 3 years on those. And then this is running Windows 8.1 Professional, so Professional or Enterprise will work with client Hyper-V. So for the lab that I'm going to demonstrate, we're going to cover off kind of the main operating systems that are probably used in your environment today. We're not going to talk about XP. Hopefully you guys are all done with XP and on to the greatest and latest. You can do this with XP as well. It's just a little bit trickier since they've dropped support in MDT, which is another tool that we're going to be using to build out these VMs. Use TechNet while you still can. I know that's going away sometime this year. MSDN, get your MVLS media. You can use eval. They do make that available. But just one point to note on that is it actually does expire. And so if you want to build this into a living lab, not one that you're going to constantly turn down, make sure you use the regular media for that. Some of the lab software that we're going to use is Windows ADK 8.1. That's Assessment and Deployment Toolkit for Windows 8. It includes things like the deployment tools, as well as Windows PE, which is used to deploy the operating system. Microsoft Deployment Toolkit 2013, it's a solution accelerator. We'll get a little bit into that in a minute. I like Remote Desktop Connection Manager. You can connect to your VMs several ways. I've learned about that a few years ago and actually been using that ever since. It's easy to switch back and forth, and I'll show that towards the end of the presentation. For viewing any kind of log files, for those of you that aren't into Configuration Manager, there's a nice little utility called CMTrace. It'll actually show the logs rolling real time. You can set filters on it, you can merge logs, you can do a whole bunch of things. So that's a free download from the toolkit. So definitely check that out if you have to look at a lot of logs and real time. You can add other software. I didn't have time to add in other software, but like I said, you can expand this out, add the software in that you need. You might be doing System Center, SQL Server, you name it. You can add those into your own lab. Hyper-V in Windows 8.1. So they added a couple new features. This is kind of just a brief summary, mainly because it has some implications when you go to boot and if you want to change. It has a UEFI firmware. Not sure how many have messed with UEFI, but there's a little bit of differences. It does support secure boot. Other things like booting from SCSI, which earlier VMs didn't allow that. You can native boot, Pixie boot from the adapter. The catch is it's only 64-bit, and it only supports Server 12, R2, 8, and 8.1, 64-bit. So the boot media that you have to use has to also be 64-bit. If you mount an ISO that's 32-bit and you try to boot up, you get this really weird error message. And once you create a VM, it can't be changed. You basically have to recreate the VM. So just a couple things to keep in mind. They do appear to be a little bit faster. I built out a UEFI 64-bit in about 5 minutes on this machine here. So speed is good. Who's heard of the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit? Most of you. OK, good. We'll gloss over this. And I know you guys are eager to get into some of the demos here. So for those of you that aren't familiar with it, the number one thing about it, free. So it used to be published by the Solution Accelerator team. It got moved over to the Config Manager team, so they own it now. You can use it standalone or integrated. We're going to use it standalone because it's really lightweight. You can install it on just about anything, and it's very portable. It's got tons of community support. It's reliable, well-tested, you know, used by several thousand companies. I've heard of other companies that actually like to develop their own solutions around Windows AIK or Windows ADK and those deployment tools. Just easy advice on that is stop that and look at MDT, because it probably did, you know, 95% of what you did spending loads of hours writing your own custom solution or scripts, things like that. The other benefit is it's really extensible too. So it gets you 90%, 95% the way there. Okay, so I've got about 8 demos we're going to get into, and hopefully they all go off in succession, and hopefully they all work. I'm not sure how the other demos have been going this week, but I know internet's been a bit spotty, but this is all local, so as long as my scripts are set up correctly, it should rock and roll. First things first, you know, you need to install Hyper-V. We're not going to do that. I've already done that to save some time. A couple caveats there is, if it doesn't install, you might need to go into the BIOS or the UEFI and enable Intel VT if you're using an Intel chip. You can do it through the programs and features or through a simple PowerShell command line that I have here. .NET 3.5, a lot of things still require it. Hyper-V doesn't. It's actually the remote desktop connection manager requires that, so that's why I put that up there. You want to configure power options too, so if you're installing it on, say, a desktop at work or someplace that you want to be able to access later and connect to, and it goes to sleep, you're not going to be able to get to your lap. So just keep that in mind, you know, crank it up to high performance, that kind of thing. So the last thing is the ADK 8.1 components that I had mentioned earlier. Those are used by MDT, so you need to make sure you have those. There's a lot of components to ADK, and it's actually quite large. But for this setup, we actually only need the 2 components. So there's you can either click that through the GUI, or you can use this command line, and it should install it automatically for you. Okay, so the next thing we need to do is actually install and configure MDT. I've already installed it. And I've got scripts that we're going to go through to do the rest of these things. It's just kind of a succession that you'll follow. And the way I've kind of divided all these demos up, or one kind of builds upon the other one. And there should be scripts available on where you download the sessions that you can use, and we'll cover off some of those scripts. But I tried to keep them modular. I'm not a PowerShell MVP. I'm not a hardcore coder. So there's not a lot of error checking and things like that in there, but these have been used over and over again, so they're pretty reliable, and if you run into an error, something is probably not configured right, or maybe you already got a deployment share defined, that kind of thing, or there's a couple of variables that need to be set. So with that, we'll jump right into the first demo here. Okay, so the way I structured this is there's kind of a shell directory structure in that download of files, and this is just kind of my organization of how I organize things. So when you unzip it, I actually have this running off my D volume into lab software, which is a variable that you can change in the script if you want. I group the applications. Maybe you've already got images, WIM images, so you don't need to do the build and captures. You could easily just pre-populate them in here, run them. That's what I'm going to do to save some time for the demo. They'll copy them out here into the deployment share, that kind of thing. There's custom files in here that we're going to get into in a minute. Operating systems is where you would stage the media that you pull from TechNet or MSDN. And then the script files will be in there as well. So getting into the script, like I said, it's pretty simple. There's a couple variables that we're setting kind of at the top of every script, just in case you don't happen to run it first. But the first thing we need to do is create a connection account for MDT. So the goal is to automate the solution as much as possible. So when we want to build a VM or rebuild a VM, we want it to be able to automatically connect. So I create a local account, set a password on it. You can lock it down to having read access if you're not doing any captures. If you're doing captures, though, you want to write back to the capture directory. It needs to be able to write to that directory as well. That's already been created. However, I do have 2 one-liners in here that will actually create that account and set it to not expire. So if you're in a secure environment, obviously, You don't want to be propagating passwords around and that kind of thing, but this is actually going to go into our boot image, so just be conscious of that. The next thing we want to do is create our deployment share. You could do all this in the workbench by clicking through things, but the nice thing about this is you can just come run this, it'll automatically set it up for you. The next thing, we're going to actually create a folder structure just to kind of group things and keep them a little bit more organized. So I like to put my, you know, full operating systems in a full OS directory. So we create a full OS directory under operating systems, and I like to group my images under an images directory. That way I know which one's the full, which one's my customized image, that kind of thing. We've got some task sequences that we're going to create. We're going to create build and capture task sequences. We're also going to create deploy task sequences as well. So that'll be used when we go to build our VMs, or if you've got it connected into a lab that actually has physical machines, you can build those as well. And then just as an example, although we're not going to use it in deployment today, I got two sample applications that we're actually going to suck into the workbench that you could use in your task sequences. The next thing we need to do is actually edit our bootstrap.ini file. So there's two files that kind of drive MDT in terms of what it's going to do. The first one is the bootstrap.ini. That's when it first boots up. It tells it where to connect to and what to run. This can all be automated by putting these variables in the bootstrap.ini file. It tells it where to connect, and we want to automate it, so we actually want to skip the welcome wizard that usually pops up. By having the credentials in there, it skips the asking you for credentials as well, so it helps automate that process. The next file that drives the instructions after it actually boots up and processes is the custom settings INI file. The custom settings INI file, you can equally do a lot of automation in there. So they call it light touch installation because usually they expect you to be clicking through things, but you can actually fully automate the MDT deploy process. And the last thing we're going to do is actually update our deployment share. So updating the deployment share is just going to generate our boot images that we're actually going to mount to our VMs and automatically build those out. So let me go ahead and, since we've already created our user account, just a quick show of hands, who's familiar with PowerShell? Okay, good, most of the room. So as you know, for those of you that don't know PowerShell ISV, it's kind of nice because you can run sections of your script. If you're doing testing or development, that kind of thing, you can actually just highlight one section of a line and actually run it, and it will create everything for you. So it ran through that pretty fast. I had my workbench already open. I did not have a deployment share actually created here. So if I refresh this, we see what we got to share. One other point I'd like to mention too is you actually can have multiple deployment shares. You're not just limited to one. And we'll kind of get into that towards the end of the session. So you can have, you know, one that you just do build and captures off of, for example. So the folder structure that we kind of set up here is we created this Microsoft subfolder, and we just kind of set up our shell. So here's our images. We set up one for each of the operating systems, and this is where we're going to import our images. So you see right now there's nothing in here. The beauty of MDT is it's all PowerShell driven too. So if you do something manually in here, there's a little view script option that you can pop up, and it'll actually show you what the commandlet was that it ran in the background. So the last one here is task sequences. So we've got a shell for our capture and deploy. So if we go back over here, this guy should finish up in creating our deployment share. And lastly, if we click over here, we should see that our deployment share directory is now here. And if our sharing worked correctly, we should see our MDT service account with full control. So Next thing I want to talk about is the custom settings INI file. So actually, I've already got it open here for you. So this first default section, we can put a bunch of things in here to automate that wizard that usually pops up, like asking you for the time zone, asking if you want to make a backup, presenting a final summary screen, that kind of thing. By defining these, it'll blow through all those wizards since you already answer all the questions. Another thing you can do is you can define machines by MAC address. So if you specify up here in the priority line that we want to look at MAC address, it's going to read through this entire file to see if it's got a matching MAC address. And we could effectively answer even more questions that you would get asked, like, what task sequence do you want to run? Do we want to back it up? What work group or what domain do we want to join? What time zone? What do we want to do when we're done with this build process? Do we want to shut down or just log off, that kind of thing? So you can define all these. One thing I'll point out is this is kind of my method for MAC addresses. So in Hyper-V, when we create a VM, we can use a dynamic MAC address, or we can define our MAC addresses. So I've kind of come up with a nomenclature for our build and capture machines of 7 for Windows 7, 1 for Service Pack 1, and 64 for 64-bit. And I kind of follow very similar naming conventions throughout the whole process. So as you see, I name my machine effectively Win7 Enterprise, easy to identify. I know what it's going to be. As we get into the next demo, we're actually going to create a task sequence for doing the build and capture. So I like to designate a C behind as a capture and a D for deployment. We define that we're going to actually capture this thing up to the host. I'll kick one off, but we won't have enough time for it to actually finish by the end of the session. We can give it a WIM file name as well, and a few of the other things. So as you use this file, just be careful because, I've defined all this to match up to the VMs that we're going to automatically create as well. And we see that our deployment share has updated. So that does actually take some time to run, and that's where the speed of the SSD comes into play. So the next thing we need to do is we need to configure Hyper-V. So not sure how many of you are fans of the start page and going back and forth. I typically like to pin things at the taskbar that I commonly use. We want to create our network switches, so we'll create some virtual switches. Optionally, those will create some virtual NICs. You could configure static addresses for that if you want. If you don't have DHCP running on the other side, you don't have to. I like to put everything in a Hyper-V folder, so I create a D Hyper-V folder, and then we're going to create a bunch of VMs that we're going to do our build and captures from. And I've already imported the domain controller. The way I labeled these scripts, too, is kind of 01 through 08. So it follows kind of a nice succession. So you can look and see exactly which one's doing what. If you want to repeat the same order, like end-to-end, and build it into your own lab. Once again, we set some variables up at the top. We create some switches. If you're going to do build and captures, typically I'll attach my build and capture machines to share the Ethernet switch that gets created that my host device has because it has internet access. That way we can run Windows deployments, things like that. However, this is not connected, so in this demo I'm just going to join them to my internal network. if we look at that in Hyper-V, we see that I've already defined an internal and an Ethernet switch. So we'll skip that part of the PowerShell script. Likewise, I've already created a D Hyper-V directory. Just my preference. Hyper-V likes to bury it in a couple different directory locations. I like it because we can easily port this out, which I'll talk about at the end of the session. Next thing we want to do is we want to create some of our build and capture VMs. So this is going to be kind of, you know, what your system can afford in terms of memory-wise, disk space, and where you decide to set your locations. This is a little bit different because I modified these scripts to incorporate the Gen 2 VMs for the 64-bit Windows 8 and Server 12 machines. But the beauty of Hyper-V is this is all PowerShell enabled too. So anything you can do in the console, you can automate through PowerShell. We're just assigning a gig of memory. Obviously, if you're building a server that needs a little bit more, like a CM server, you might give it like 3 or 4 if you can afford it. You can define your VHD size, what switch it's going to go over to. And then, as I pointed out in the custom settings INI file, I'm statically assigning the MAC address for this VM. So when it first boots up, it's going to know exactly what task sequence to run and kick off the build and capture. You want to define a snapshot location as well. That's going to be critical and save you some time down the road. So with that, we will create some of these other ones. And while this is going, okay. Didn't define the path first. All right, so in about 15 seconds, we should have 5 brand new VMs ready to be built and captured. For the Gen 2 VMs, there's some other things that need to be defined. And I can probably put these up on my blog or something later because they're not in the sample downloads. But you basically want to get the SCSI controller, add a DVD drive to it because they don't have one by default. And that's what we'll use to mount our boot ISO that we generated. And the other thing is you need to set the boot order. So if you specify dash boot order, it will replace anything that was in there previously. So if you need to do Pixie booting as well, you want to make sure that you set that in the boot order. But For the purposes of our lab, we're just going to boot off of the DVD drive first and then the hard disk second. So switching over in here, we see that we've got our 5 brand new VMs now ready to go. So you don't have to have all the operating systems. If you're just using one or two of them, you don't need to import everything. In this one, we'll import all of them. And we'll use it using a script. The script is looking for something that's similar to the TechNet. So just be conscious of that. If you've downloaded it and you change the name of the ISO or things like that, you can update the script accordingly. I'm not sure what the MVLS ISOs look like. I think they're kind of a similar naming convention. And then the next thing we want to do is actually import all those into the deployment workbench. Uh, The other thing to point out too, in addition to these variables that you can update and change, we need to import the module unless you make it part of your profile. But this simple command at the top, even if you've already imported, it'll actually re-import that PowerShell module. Like I said, this is the directory structure that we're kind of looking at in terms of what the ISO may be. So if you've changed that, instead of doing some complex looking at things in the directory and trying to match it up, you could just hard code that if you wanted to. What this does with Windows 8, it's nice that you can actually mount ISOs now and you don't have to use a third-party software. So PowerShell fully supports that. We can mount it. We need to get the drive letter to tell MDT where to look for the drive letter. We also need to get the device path so that we can unmount it. Otherwise, we end up with a whole bunch of mounted ISOs that you probably don't want hanging around. We're going to import these into the full OS folder structure that we set up in the workbench earlier. And we're going to go ahead and give it the destination folder name as well. So this one should be able to run straight out of the box. This will take a little bit of time because we are mounting those ISOs and they're pretty large. But this machine will chew through it pretty quickly. Just due to the fact that it's got a fast disk on it. So once the first one goes in, we'll flip over to the workbench here, and we'll see them start to appear. Oops. There's the first one there. So we'll let those run. And we'll switch back to the slides. So like I said, if you've already created your build and captures, you don't need to repeat that step. But if you're going to be, you know, building your custom images that you want to use in your test lab, it's nice to have the full set of source files so you can rerun through and do a fresh build and capture. We're going to import just two applications. Like I said, we're not going to use them, but I got a sample script into there. And the whole goal is that you guys can take it and you build it and put your own applications in so you can suck them into your own workbench. Especially if you're going from environment to environment, it's very handy. Okay, this is still running. So let's switch over to this. Once again, this is just using the MDT application commandlet. We're defining that we want to put it in the Microsoft directory. I'm just doing the remote desktop connection manager in the toolkit that we mentioned earlier. We put a couple other things in here like display name, company name, command line that we're going to use to actually install it, what the working path is going to be. The source path, so the software directories are lab_software, so that's where it's gonna suck it in from. And what name we want it to be or what the destination folder that it'll go into in the deployment share. So if we have a look at our deployment share here, we don't have any applications in here right now, brand new. Script. And there's our two applications, and they will show up in the workbench here. So, like I said, this is nothing that you can't do manually, and it's just a lot of clicking. If you like clicking, but if you like automating things and spending your time on other things, then the script is really nice for doing that. So. All right, so the next thing we need to do is create our reference images or our build and capture images. We're going to create the task sequences to do that. MDT has templates that are default out of the box that do it for you. We've already defined all the variables to do the capturing and things like that. You can customize this if you want to. Obviously, if you got your own software that's going to go down, you want to apply updates and things like that. You can easily add them into the workbench. Or there's a handy little trick of actually suspending the task sequence. So we're going to inject that line in there. It's really powerful for two things. The first thing is you can do things manually that might be kind of a pain to automate. Or like I said, you can run Windows Update if you want, that kind of thing. The other benefit to it is once we've done that, we want to create a checkpoint or a snapshot of that VM, because maybe you forgot to put something in and you need to inject some more files in or put something else in, or maybe next month or 3 months from now, we want to redo that process and apply the latest Windows updates that have come. So we can revert to that snapshot, rerun Windows Update or whatever we need to do, create another checkpoint at that time, and then let the task sequence continue and create our build and capture image. It saves time. It's a little more efficient than having to rerun through the whole process. You could do that. There are other ways that you can actually automate the full process end to end. Maybe we have automated all our customizations and things like that, so maybe we just set up a reoccurring scheduled task. So on our machine, it's doing our build and captures every second Tuesday of the month. It just goes out, runs it, generates a new boot image or a new capture image. So the first thing we need to do is create the task sequences. This is pretty straightforward. You can define things like the template that we're going to use. So they have a client template and a server template, so you want to make sure you're using the right one for the right operating system. You can put any comments in that you want to put in. This is the task sequence ID that we're going to assign to each of these task sequences. And mouse is not cooperating. So as I mentioned earlier, I've got the little C here to designate. This is our capture task sequence ID for Windows 7 Enterprise. We tell it what operating system to run, which is the one that we just imported. You can give it a company name, username. Since it's a capture image, we probably don't care about setting a home page. Probably do that at deploy time. And set your super secret admin password that you want to use so that you can actually log on if you need to. So hit play on that, and if we go to our workbench now, under our captures, we've got 5 build and capture task sequences just like that. So once again, you could do it all manually, but it's just very simple to do it this way. Actually, what we'll do is we'll go ahead and take our Windows 8 Enterprise 64-bit task sequence. And this is where we want to put in our pause. So you can put the pause in anywhere. Most of you are familiar with MDT, which is good, so you shouldn't be a stranger to task sequences or the editor. But we're going to go ahead and add in our run command line step to actually pause this task sequence. I'm going to cheat because I don't want to typo anything. Paste that in there, and let's just call this pause. What it'll do is it'll pop a little icon on the desktop that you double click to actually resume it. So, very handy trick. All right, so once we've got our build and captures, we want to actually import those into MDT, and those are going to go under our images subfolder for the respective operating system. Like I said, I've pre-created these. We'll kick off one just to let it roll kind of in the background while we're going through the rest of the demos, see where we get to when it catches up. When you import a captured WIM, MDT likes to give it this really ugly name, which just kind of bugs me. It's got kind of the volume, the capture letter, and things like that. So I just rename it for simplicity's sake. So there's a section in the script that I'll show you for doing that, because we'll actually reference that name going forward when we go to create our deployment task sequences. So first things first, let's grab our Windows 8 x64 machine. And we'll let that power up. And hopefully it can, the other thing too is it doesn't automatically boot off of the DVD drive. You gotta actually catch it and hit a key. Otherwise it'll continue to the next, unlike a legacy VM. If it doesn't have a formatted drive, it just automatically boots off of the media. So while that's thinking, let's switch over to number 6, which is import our captured images. So in my lab software directory over here, to speed things up, I'd created some captures prior to TechEd and put them in this directory here. So we're effectively going to import them from this. We're going to move them to the capture directory and then have MDT import them from there. Once again, it'll import the PowerShell module for MDT, just in case you want to come back and rerun this. Here, we're just moving them, so it's just effectively a move that you could do through Windows Explorer, just to make it simple and easy. We're going to tell it where to import those to. In terms of the deployment share, it's coming from the captures folder. And we're going to put it in our destination folder, which kind of follows our naming convention that we've actually set out. So, lastly, I'm grabbing what we actually imported to get that long name. It typically looks like something like this, which is a little bit ugly, but I like to just kind of simplify it and make it nice and simple, matching, once again, our naming convention here. And then we just rename it within the workbench. So rename item, standard PowerShell. Let's run this script. And there we go. We've imported all of our captures. So it's moved them out of this directory into our deployment share capture directory, which was too fast. And then has moved them now into our operating systems directory. So we see that we've got our WIM file in here. So since it's all moves, it's just changing the pointers. It's really fast. But as you can see, our operating systems directory is getting quite large with all that content. So we got about 30 gigs in there right now. If we go back to the workbench, hit refresh. We'll see our 2 Windows 8 images there. And Windows 7 and our Server 12 image as well. Oh, our script palmed out. Invalid credentials. Okay, we'll come back to that. All right, so now we need to create our deployment task sequences. So this is what we're actually going to deploy to our lab machines. Like I said, you can further customize this. So if you didn't bake it into your build and capture image, maybe you want to layer on some applications at deploy time that change frequently that you don't want in your image. We can add those into the task sequence directly. We could even define it in the custom settings INI file also. And one other point I'd like to note is you could create a database. MDT will use a database, and you could put stuff in the database as well. The database just isn't as portable when you go to move it from one machine to another. So the custom settings is just a text file. It's really lightweight, so that's why I prefer that method over the database. And you can create your own. I got some tips towards the end of the session where you can go look for some that have already been created. Maybe you need to create a SAM server, a web server, or this or that. You can define your own task sequences as well. So maybe you got to do a lot of IIS testing. Create a customized task sequence that builds it out to your company standards. Okay, so this is very similar to the task sequences that we created for the captures, except they're just deploys. we're just calling the images that we just imported. We're giving it a task sequence ID with the D, so that's kind of what I use for deploy task sequence. It matches up to what I have in the custom settings INI file. So if I go look at this further down, we get to... These are our VMs that we're going to create in a minute. So we've got PC01, and we want this guy to always run Windows 7, for example. And it's using the deploy task sequence. We can also see that we want to join our company domain or our lab domain, the credentials that we're going to use to actually join that domain as well. And unlike the build and capture, we want to just log off so that we can actually use those machines. We don't want to shut it down after it finishes deploying. We tell it which image we're going to use. Once again, you can set your company name in there. You want to brand it in case you give it to your coworker. You know, put some Easter eggs in there if you want. Set your home page, that kind of thing. So. Once again, we'll just go ahead and hit play on this one. And if we go back to our workbench here and look in our deploy folder, hit F5 refresh, we just created 5 of our deployment task sequences. So let me just, real quick, I think I had accidentally created the wrong password. So we'll just reset it really quickly. Rerun it. All right, now that we've created our deploy task sequences, we need to create the rest of our VMs. Technically, you could have created the VMs previously. You might not always create, build, and capture VMs. So I created a separate script just for that. So if you got a load of VMs, maybe you're running on a really big server, you can add to that and have as many as you want and just generate them at will. And get a little more fancy, and you could actually take down the VMs and recreate those VMs as well. So the last script, it looks very similar to the VMs that we created for the build and captures, you know, setting what switch they're going to be on, what path we're going to put them in. Maybe you have two volumes, you want to put them in different volumes to kind of split up the load, that kind of thing. But as you notice with the other one, I have a little bit different naming convention for the regular VMs as I do the build and captures. This still tells me that this is Windows 7. And it's 64-bit, but I like the last digit just to kind of match the PC digit name. So that way, if you got to do anything with MAC addresses, you know which machine it goes to. And if you really want to get into locking down, creating DHCP reservations or things like that, so you know that you always want PC01 to have, you know, .101, you can use that same MAC address and make it all kind of line up. So we're going to mount these to our boot ISOs just like we did with our other ones, and with our UEFI devices we got to do just a little bit of extra trickery in the UEFI to make it have a boot DVD. So if we look at our virtual machines here, we've just got these to begin with, so we'll go ahead and create five more. Ready to go. All right, I must have messed something up there. We'll take a look at that in a second. Connecting to the VMs, as you are familiar with Hyper-V, you can use the Hyper-V Connection Manager. If you've enabled remote desktop on these machines, if you have a portable domain controller that you use in your isolated lab, set up a GPO so you can RDP directly to the machines, so you can use the built-in remote desktop connection. Or like I said, I like to use the remote desktop connection manager because I can easily see all my VMs, and these are actually live tiles. Once you connect to them, you can actually click in here. So if you're running a lot of different log files on a lot of different systems, it's kind of a good way to actually monitor a whole bunch of things at once. Since I'm having a connection issue, I'm going to go ahead and skip this one here. So the deployment share, once you get it built the way that you want it, you can actually grab that deployment share, copy it over the network, copy it onto a USB hard drive over to another system. So maybe you've developed your personal lab and you now want to upload this thing onto a server that's in your lab. You can basically take that deployment share, import it in, and you can actually use it just like you're using it on your personal lab. You want to make sure you update the bootstrap.ini file because it's going to want to point to your original machine. So after you do that, you want to make sure you update your deployment share when you moved it over to that other lab. Like I said, if you don't need to do build and captures, if we look at it, we'll look at it in a second. This deployment share is pretty large now that it's got all the full OS source, You might not need that. You can create a different deployment share just to build out your labs and maintain them. So if you have one system that you're doing all your build and captures on, you might only need it there. It just kind of keeps the size down a little bit. So if we take a look at our deployment share here, we're up to about 30 gigs. So you start adding in SQL, System Center, and some other things, it can get quite large. Take a little bit of time to actually copy over. So just one thing to note of. I'll show you where the two control files sit. They actually sit in the control directory. So if we look at this, here's our bootstrap.ini. So this is what we actually edited here. And this is where we set our password. That doesn't appear to be working. But you'll see that we'd set a variable to the actual host name. So when you do move it over to another location, just make sure you update this, update the deployment share, and then you should be good to go. If you have a different service account, you can change that information as well. If you do want to update or add other machines into your custom settings ini file, you can just edit this one. So if you got the MAC address wrong or you left something off, you can just update it real quick, save it, reboot your machine, and then it'll take off and start going. So you can add to this over time. Maybe you've got some physical laptops that you want to test on. Get the MAC addresses for them. Go ahead and define them in here, and they'll boot off this deployment share as well and build out. One thing to note, though, about the physical devices, chances are you'll have to import your drivers into the workbench, which I didn't actually cover off here because the virtual machines don't require any extra drivers. So, once you get it set up and working, no need to actually dismount those ISOs. I kind of like to think of the ISOs as a disk of death. I remember way back in the Windows NT days, we wanted to automate building out machines, really automate it to where you don't actually need to press any key. And with a fully unattended install of Windows NT, and if you happen to leave that thing in your CD drive, and it was set to boot up off of CD drive. Maybe you were working late on a Friday trying to work on that, and you powered down for the weekend, and you came in Monday morning, went to power up your machine, and it got rebuilt. So same concept with these. If you do reboot off of them, it will boot into MDT and rerun your task sequence. So it's great for refreshing your clients that you've already got established in there. You might say, well, why don't you use snapshots or checkpoints? You could use checkpoints, and you could revert to them, but chances are you're going to start chewing up more disk space with those snapshots. And if you're like me, I kind of have a hard time remembering which snapshot was what and what time period, and I just find it easier if I want to freshen up a machine. I just rebuild it because it'll build it out in like 5 minutes. So the snapshots are great, though, for your build and captures, if you've well-structured and make a little note, that kind of thing. But for just your general lab VMs, it's just as easy to rebuild them if you want to freshen them up. In terms of the folder structure, you don't really need to do anything special. So if you define your machines like we did here, you can effectively copy these off over the network or onto a USB drive and into your server or your coworker's machine. And you can go into Hyper-V either through the GUI or you can do it via script and basically import all those VMs directly. It'll register them in place, or you can set it up to register them in place, and you don't need to do export and then a full-blown import where you're having to define all the different locations of the snapshots and the VHD. kind of the directory structure that Hyper-V uses by default. So it's very handy. We'll just take a look at one of them. It creates a structure here. Actually, you'll have a snapshots folder as well if you've created any snapshots, but we haven't created any yet. So that's kind of a handy trick in terms of making your VMs modular, giving them to your coworkers, or setting up your shared lab. All right, so two other popular methods. One is the hydration kit for System Center 2012. And have you been in the deployment world? You've probably heard of Johan or Widmark. He created the hydration kit. It's a little bit different in terms of the fact that it creates a full standalone media that gets mounted to the VMs. But he's got a wealth of knowledge that he's built off of in there. So when I mentioned earlier that you can get sample task sequences for building out a CM server or any number of servers, he's got a pretty full list of applications already defined, and you just need to, quote, hydrate them with the source files. Definitely have a look at that, because a lot of work there, and it's very handy for enhancing your deployment share. If you're into deploying System Center, there's the PowerShell deployment toolkit, which does a lot of the same things. It'll build out VMs using PowerShell. There's, I think, three or four different PowerShell scripts. They're much longer than mine. I think some of them go up to 7,000 lines. Pretty comprehensive error checking, making sure that you get the right version of Windows and everything else. But it's useful as well, too. And if you're advanced PowerShell scripter, you can get some good tips and tricks from his scripts. And that's about it. We've got a couple breakout sessions. I think most of them have already occurred since we're on the second to the last day at the last time slot. There's a couple labs. You can always go back and look at some of these. I know Johan did have a few sessions in there as well. But you might want to go check those out. If you really want to get into MDT customizations, make sure you look at some of those also. There's a lot of documentation around MDT. When you download it, you can download the printed docs. They have one doc just dedicated to all the variables that you can use. So reading through that, you can get some good tips or tricks, or if there's something that you want to actually do that you haven't quite figured out, look through the variables first. Or if you want to enhance it by extending your own scripts, there's some good examples for that as well. So there's a few Windows related tracks. Obviously the desktop optimization pack has some handy tools in there as well. You can create some virtual apps. Maybe you got to test virtual applications. That's where you can get that V information as well. So more resources and complete your evaluation. Thanks for staying this late. I know it's late in the day and it's been a long 3 days or 4 days if you attended the pre-con, but I appreciate you coming out. Hopefully you'll find this useful, and good luck with your labs, and have a great evening and rest of the conference.